Let's open our Bibles to 1 Samuel, chapter number 31, and talk about the Battle of Mount Gilboa. It's actually the Battle of Jezreel and Mount Gilboa, because the battle between the invading Philistines starts from their camp just north of Jezreel, where they are engaged by the Israelis who have been encamped on Mount Gilboa, but also at the waters of Jezreel. And once they engage, it turns into a rout almost immediately. 1 Samuel 31, verse 1. Now the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines, and they fell slain on Mount Gilboa. As I've shared with you, the place that we call Mount Gilboa is not just one single peak. It's actually a long area on the extreme southeast part of the Valley of Jezreel. It's the slope that goes up into the hill country of Israel proper. And so the Philistine forces push the retreating forces of Israel that direction. And they start dying in large numbers in that general vicinity. Now we have the royal entourage that gets overrun together. Verse 2 says, the Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan, Abinadab, Malchishua, the sons of Saul. Now these are the three sons we've seen mentioned in another passage. We know that there is a fourth son that is not at this battle, and we are not altogether certain why that is the case. His name, his circumcised name, the name he was given on the eighth day of his life, was Ish-Baal. Now that's not Baal as in the thunder and lightning god of the Canaanites, but Baal as in the Canaanite word for Lord, which during this period of time was a substitute for the Hebrew word Adonai, which of course is a representation of He Who Is. Later, his name will be changed in documents to Ish-Boshet, or Boshet meaning the shameful thing, because they don't, the scribes later won't want to write the name Baal. But why is Ish-Baal not here at the battle? We don't know. There is no clear-cut understanding of it. We know that he is 40 years old at this time. That means he's not the baby of the bunch, I don't believe. He's not the eldest, because that's Jonathan. He's the prince. He's the crown prince, the one that was expected to take the throne after his father. But for him to be 40, that puts him probably very close to the number two position. So this is the suggestion I'm going to make to you. We have something that happens here in the United States that is colloquially called the designated survivor, where when we have large meetings of our government, that there is a certain person that is not allowed to be at that meeting. I think it's typically the vice president, something of that nature. And so I wonder whether or not the Israelis had something similar in mind, that when the king went off to fight and he took his sons with him, he left the second son at home, just in case. Just something for you to think about. But it does tell us that these guys are in a mess. They are trapped. They are surrounded. Verse 3, the battle pressed hard against Saul, And the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. So he's getting hit by the archers at a distance, and he is mortally wounded. How do we know? Because he himself says this. Now, how do we have this information? It's either from an eyewitness who passes the information on to the writer of this section of 1 Samuel, or it is the Holy Spirit's testimony that passes this information on to the prophet writer of this section of 1 Samuel. And I really think that's more likely the case. So Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword, thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me." So he knows he's mortally wounded. His sons are probably all dead by now. And he knows that eventually he's going to be captured. They'll probably abuse him, even if he dies pretty quickly underneath what they do to him. They'll want to claim that they had victory over him in battle. And so he asks his assistant, probably a young soldier, "I want you to kill me so that they can't claim victory over me. I want them to only find my dead body." Now, the armor bearer would not do it. He feared greatly. He was afraid to kill the king because, as David had mentioned on another occasion, he wouldn't kill Saul because Saul was he who is his anointed. And so this armor bearer has a similar reaction to that idea of killing Saul, even if he's doing it for, quote, a good cause, end quote. So Saul is left to take care of matters himself. So Saul took his own sword and fell upon it. So he doesn't do the Roman thing of cutting his wrists. He doesn't do the thing that is done in other countries where you slice your own throat. He takes his sword and puts it up against his chest and then flings himself down against it onto the ground and kills himself. And so that's how he died. Thus, Saul died, and his armor bearer decides that he needs to do the same thing. His armor bearer, when he saw that Saul was dead, he also fell upon his own sword and died with him. So everybody's dead. And thus Saul died, all three of his sons and his armor bearer, all his men, on the same day together. So that's the battle of Mount Gilboa and how it ended badly for the Israeli army. Now, David, I want you to remember, is far, far away. The day that this battle takes place, David is just getting back to his city of Ziklag from defeating the Amalekites who raided his city and captured his wives and other non-combatants and took them away. So he is a good 3 to 4 days' journey away from the battlefield when Saul is killed. Why is this important? Why am I stressing it? Because I believe God made sure that no one could make the claim that David had anything to do with the death of the previous king whenever David becomes the new king. This is not a matter of a coup, a bloody coup. This is a matter of God finished up with Saul and turns everything over to David. And God made sure that David was not there in the Philistine encampment, which was the situation several days before the battle of Mount Gilboa actually took place. First Chronicles, by the way, which is going to start being a source material for us, in chapter 10, includes this little story we read about the death of King Saul and three of his sons. Back to the text, 1 Samuel 31, verse 7. When the men of Israel, who were on the other side of the valley, and those beyond the Jordan, saw that the men of Israel had fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their cities and fled. And the Philistines came and lived in them. So at this period of time, a lot of the areas bordering on the Jezreel Valley are abandoned by the Israeli residents, and the Philistines just walk in and take them over. One of those places is going to be the place where they display the dead bodies of King Saul and his sons, a place called Bethshan. Verse 8, the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, so the fighting apparently went right up until the end of the day, the Philistines at the end of the daylight hours of the battle day didn't realize that they had actually killed King Saul. I mean, they had hit him with arrows, and he ended up committing suicide. So they're not aware of that. So the next day, when the daylight breaks, they're doing battle cleanup, which is twofold. Number one is you're collecting up all the material that is useful and battle booty. But you're also going to collect up all the dead bodies and dispose of them, deal with them appropriately, so that it does not become a place of disease and rats and scavenger animals and things of that nature. So the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. So they recognized them probably from their armor, which would be slightly different, more upscale probably. But also, some of the Philistines may have had close personal interactions with Saul and his sons over the years. But they found them, and they did something that was common practice. They cut off Saul's head, and they stripped off his armor, because the armor is going to be a battle trophy for the Philistines. And then they sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to carry the good news to the house of their idols and to the people. So they want to spread the news to all Philistines that the enemy of the Philistine people, King Saul of the Israelis, is dead. And so his head makes the rounds of the Philistine cities, so that the people know beyond a shadow of a doubt their enemy is dead. The armor, we are told in verse 10, they put in the temple of Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth is the she is the partner goddess to Baal, and so she would have had temples in the five different cities of the Philistines, as well as the temples of Baal that existed there. So probably his armor goes to one of the five cities, probably not Gath, because Gath seems to be low in the pecking order amongst the five cities. So probably the most senior member of the of the five-city council of the Philistine alliance. More than likely, that king is the one that takes possession of the battle armor of Saul and puts it as a gift to his goddess Ashtoreth in his city. Now, as an alternate to that, it is possible, although not guaranteed, that it may have gone into a temple at Bethshan that was devoted to Ashtoreth. I think that less likely because I believe Bethshan at this time was an Israeli-controlled city, and that it only came into the possession of the Israelis when, as we just read in verse number 7, the Israelis abandoned their cities in the region after the Battle of Mount Gilboa. So they put his armor in the temple of Ashtoreth, and then they fastened his body, his decapitated body, to the wall of Bashan. Now, Bashan is a few miles south of the Sea of Galilee. It is in the extreme eastern end of the Jezreel Valley. It is not very far from the Jordan River. And it is a crossroads of people coming east and west and north and south. So it is the perfect place for them to put this body on display as a victory over, again, the enemy of the Philistine people who've now taken control of this city. The walls of the city at this time were clay walls, and the city was very high off of the main level of this part of the Jezreel Valley. I've actually climbed up to the top of the Tell of Bashan and seen those clay walls of this time period. And you can see a long ways around from up there, which means, of course, you would have been able to see the displayed bodies from a long ways away. And so that was their point. Verse 11, though, tells us that when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul. Now, Jabesh-Gilead has a close connection to King Saul. 20 years ago, at the beginning of his reign, Saul came and rescued the people of Jabesh-Gilead from Nahash the Ammonite, who was threatening to abuse them and take them over. But it wasn't just that. We know that Jabesh-Gilead was the place from which at least some of the ladies came that helped restart the Benjamin tribal group when the Benjamin group was almost wiped out by the rest of the Israeli tribes because of the sinful activities that happened and were reported on in the book of Judges. So it is highly likely that King Saul had distant relatives living still in Jabesh-Gilead. So he is both a hero to them, and he is very likely a relative of theirs. So when that city, which is, I think it's like 16, 17 miles downriver and across river from Bethshan. So when they heard about it, verse 12, all the valiant men arose. They went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan. So they mounted a nighttime operation to come all the way to the city of Bashan, go up on the top of that hill, that tell, and to then take down those displayed bodies while everybody else is sleeping and go away with them, because there was no way in the world that they were going to allow the bodies of their king and the bodies of his sons to be treated with such disrespect. And so they took them down, and then they came back to Jabesh and they burned them there. Cremation of remains was not prohibited by Jewish scripture, and during certain periods of Israeli history, it was actually considered a special honor to be given to high-ranked persons to cremate their bodies and then inter those cremated remains. So don't be taken aback by the cremation that's taking place here. So they took their bones, the material that didn't burn would be pretty much the bones, and then they buried them under the tamarisk tree and Jabesh, and then they fasted 7 days. So they effectively had a funeral, buried the remains in a special place. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that the tamarisk tree here is right next to the worship area in Jabesh Gilead, because they often marked their worship site at a town by putting it on a hill, but also putting it right next to or under a very large tree that can be seen from a distance. Then the 7 days fasting, that is typical for sitting Sheva to have this time of sorrow, official grieving for anyone that you know as an Israeli. 30 days is often the grieving period for somebody very high placed. So I am interested by the fact that they went for 7 days rather than the 30 days. So that finishes up the prophetic words found in 1 Samuel. Probably the scroll was filled out as best should be used. And so we now move to the next scroll, 2 Samuel. And so 2 Samuel chapter 1 continues the story. After the death of Saul, when David had returned from striking down the Amalekites, David remained 2 days in Ziklag, and then on the third day, behold, a man came from Saul's camp. Now that all fits perfectly with the chronology I've been giving to you, that David arrived back at Ziklag the exact same day that the battle of Mount Gilboa was going on. So David was at Ziklag for another 2 days after he got back. And then on the third day, a message arrives from the Mount Gilboa battlefield about the death of Saul. So it takes about 3 days to move from the eastern end of the Jezreel Valley down to Ziklag, which is south of Gath. So here comes this messenger from Saul's camp with his clothes torn, dirt on his head, which would be kind of the symbolic way of showing grief, remember? Ashes or dirt put up onto your hair and on your face. When he came to David, he fell down to the ground and paid homage. So he treats him as a royal person or a high-placed person in society. David said to him, "Where you come from?" And he said to him, "I've escaped from the camp of Israel." So now David knows that this guy has just arrived from the battlefield. So David said to him, "How did it go? Tell me." Now David almost certainly suspected it didn't go well based on the state of this guy. He's got dirt all over him. So he answered, "The people fled from the battle." So they were routed. "And also many of the people have fallen and are dead." So there are high casualties. "And Saul and his son Jonathan are also dead." Now, the author of this section of 2 Samuel is focused specifically on Saul and Prince Jonathan, King Saul and Prince Jonathan, because those are the ones that David will be focused on. I am sure that he said that the other two sons of Saul present at the battle were also dead. Verse 5, then David said to the young man who told him. Now, how young is this guy? We don't know. Young is a relative thing. Sometimes people in their 30s, right around 40 even, can be considered young in the way that this word is used. But he said to this young man who told him, how do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead? And then this young man spins a tale. Now, I don't want to pull any punches. I don't want to leave you guessing. I believe this guy is lying through his teeth. Because we already read from the inspired message at the end of 1 Samuel that Saul was mortally wounded by arrow fire. He asked his armor bearer to kill him to keep the Philistines from catching him alive and mistreating him and all of that. The guy refused, so Saul killed himself. That's what we know from the inspired information. This guy's going to tell a different story, which I believe he's spinning to his own purposes. We're almost out of time. Let me read his story, though. The young man who told him said, by chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa. There was Saul leaning on his spear. And behold, the chariots and the horsemen were close upon him. When he looked behind him, he saw me and he called me. And I answered, here I am. And he said to me, who are you? And I answered him, I'm an Amalekite. And he said, stand beside me and kill me, for anguish has seized me, and yet my life still lingers. So I stood beside him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not leave after he had fallen.